The description is too generic. Mm-hmm. Interviews and insights from intellectuals and top performers. Tim Ferriss does that.
Yeah.
So how is this different than what Tim Ferriss is doing?
I heard Tim on a conversation recently talking about how essentially he is adjusting his expectations around podcasting, where it's just becoming impossible for him to compete anymore at the top. When I look at trends in podcasting, the shows that are growing are much more concept driven than just interviews with successful people. And Tim was one of the people who pioneered that and really made that popular. But even Tim Ferriss, with this show format, is not having as easy as the time as he used to have. Welcome back to another podcast roast, where in every episode, we break down one of our listeners' show's packaging, and so their cover art, show title, description, episode titles, to help them improve their show's discoverability and audience acquisition, and hopefully help you do the same along the way. And in this episode, we are roasting the Distilled podcast, and this is actually by one of our sadly few Canadian listeners, it seems. And so Blake, the host, is only our fifth Canadian review. We actually have one-star review in the Canadian store, which is pulling our average down. So Canadian listeners, help us out here. Blake was boosting the average, and as a reward, he is going to get roasted today. I don't know if that's a good reward or a bad one, but Justin, I'm going to turn it over to you, and I would love to hear your first impressions as you open up the Distilled podcast on your app.
All right. I want Blake's podcast to succeed. I want him to set it up with the best possible chance of success. First thing I notice is the title of this show is DSTLLD. So an abbreviated way of spelling distilled. The challenge of this is you told me the title of the show. I tried searching for it in Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It took me 5 tries to get it right. And so already you're increasing the amount of friction, how difficult it is for me to find the show. Generally, you want the easiest version of spelling. You want the title that's easiest to understand audibly. If someone said, hey, you've got to listen to the Distilled podcast, you want them to be able to just pull up their search engine and find it easily. There should just be no confusion when people are looking at it. And this kind of creative interpretation of, you know, spelling distilled, I think is hurting the show.
Yeah, I think, you know, I like it from a brand perspective where it's essentially this concept of distilling. We've kind of shrunk it down. But from a discovery perspective, it is certainly, especially in podcasting, it's certainly hurting the show where this is not a show where there is going to be any kind of keywords in the title. And so it's not really about search in terms of, you know, coming up for whatever the topic of the show is. But this is really about somebody's heard about the show already. They're actively trying to find it. And if they can't find it, somebody who's kind of maybe on the fence, like they're not going to give it 5 tries probably in order to search it out. If they just heard about it, they're like, oh, I guess I'll try and find it later. And now you've kind of lost them forever. And it makes me think of, I think talked about a book before on the show called Hello, My Name is Awesome. And the author is Alexandra Watkins. And so the whole book is around naming your business, product. It's not explicitly about podcasting, but it could be. And so she's got this framework for naming. And one of the steps in that framework is to think about, are there alternative spellings? Could this be confused if people hear it and they think it's a different word? And so I think, is this a homonym? Words that sound the same but mean different things or are spelled differently? I can't quite remember back to whatever grade that was where we learned that. But that can be problematic for all types of, you know, podcast brands, products, all these things. And so it's not something that you usually think about in the moment because you're so steeped in your show that you're like, I know what I mean. And you're like, this is a great name. It's really clever. But if somebody else who has zero knowledge about it, it gets really hard to, you know, get them with incomplete information to be able to find their way back to the show.
Yeah. And the other kind of test is go into the top 200 podcast lists and look at the spellings of those shows. And they are just mostly straightforward, easy to spell, easy to search titles. And so if you're looking for, you know, survivorship bias, like if you're looking for the shows that are in the top 10% that have survived, that have gotten listeners, often the spelling is easy.
Yeah.
And it just makes it easier to find the show.
I want to point out a couple other examples of this, because this is a bit of a more extreme creative decision here, which again, I like some of the intent from a branding perspective behind this, but it does make it hard for listeners to find it. But there are a lot of more common scenarios where this plays out. And so one of the most common is using the word "and" in your title. And so I know I've had conversations with our listener, Michael Osborne from Famous and Gravy, where he had encountered this kind of problem, especially with website URLs, of now you have to spell it out each time and say it's "and." You can't have an ampersand in the middle of your URL. And so it's kind of like it's spelled out, I think, famousandgravy.com, but I think they use the ampersand in their titling elsewhere. And so there becomes this point of friction by having that in the title. And of course, like, it's to some extent, you know, if you've got a title that has the word "and" in it, you kind of need it. But now you've added this layer of complexity and friction elsewhere. A couple other examples that come to mind for me are, these are actually both very successful shows, so it can be overcome, but 99% Invisible. I'm not actually sure how they spell the show in their feed. I think their website is actually 99PI. And so I'm assuming that's because they encountered this problem and people were typing in the percent sign and weren't getting there. And so they said, let's actually just make it really easy. And the other one that comes to mind is 20,000 Hertz, which you could spell that a couple of ways. There's 20 versus 20. And there's also Hertz, which could be abbreviated as HZ. And I don't actually know what they do with their URL and everything else. So this is a potential issue to be aware of when you're titling your show, for sure.
Yeah. If you're going to make up a word, generally it's better to kind of combine two words into a single word, like Tiger Belly is a very popular show, and they've combined the word tiger and belly together. So now they have a brand, Tiger Belly, which is all one word. Smartless is another one, right? We're combining two words to make a unique brand. Again, I want Blake's show to succeed. And I think in his case, the branding here may be hurting the discoverability of the show.
Yeah. What are your thoughts as we move on to the cover art?
Yeah. So two notes. We noticed that it's displaying differently in Apple Podcasts and everywhere else. Mm-hmm. And so you may need to go into Apple Podcast Connect. There's a refresh feed link that you can click on, and that should pull your new artwork. If it doesn't pull your new artwork, I would contact your podcast hosting provider and say, something's wrong here. Like, it's not pulling my artwork, and see if they can assist you in that. The one we're seeing here in Spotify, I mean, I like, there's a human face. We've talked about human faces being compelling on their own. And then he's got the title of the podcast. I think it's okay. It doesn't, the title and the cover art doesn't tell me anything about the show.
Yeah.
There's no clues about what the show's about, who it's for, why I should listen. And so the only thing that might compel me to listen is if Blake, in this case, you know, if I recognized his face or his name, I might be like, oh, this is Blake's show. I'm going to listen. What about you?
Yeah, that's the same thing here, where from just the title and the cover art, I know nothing about the show. And that's essentially my assumption, is that it's entirely irrelevant to me. And I'm not going to, you know, give it a second look. If I'm somebody who might actually be an ideal listener, but I don't know Blake, I don't know the podcast yet, this just comes across my screen. There's a lot of stuff that comes across my screen every day, thousands of things. And so, you know, our default is to tune them out unless there's something that so obviously screams at us. And luckily for us, our brains are constantly looking for things that are relevant to us. Kind of behind the scenes, we don't realize it. But we as creators need to surface that to give our listeners' subconscious something to latch onto and just get them to, like, wait, spend one more second looking at this and seeing, is this something that's relevant to you? And then clicking in. So it's professionally designed. It looks legitimate to me, which is great, but there's not really any kind of legibility into what the show is. And so I don't know, obviously, yet we haven't gone through the whole show, what I would recommend there, but maybe the description will offer us some clues as to what the show might be about, and maybe we can circle back on the cover art later on in the roast.
Okay, let me read the description. Refining life's ungoogleable answers. Interviews and insights from intellectuals and top performers about how to live a meaningful and successful life.
So my first thought, the ungoogleable answers is an interesting hook to me. I think the description could do more to flesh that out for me, is my first thought. And so the ungoogleable answers, I think that this is something that there is an interesting idea there about, there's only so much like practical, actionable information that you can get and find on Google that's going to help you advance in your life or career or relationships or whatever it is, that a lot of the messiness of life is inherently ungoogleable. So that there's a seed of an interesting idea there. And I think mm-hmm. that the description could do a lot more to ground that in like what specifically, what types of ungoogleable answers. And this doesn't even mm-hmm. really give us any domains that the show covers. And so is this related to my career or to my personal life or, you know, my health or whatever that might be? And so mm-hmm. it's really still not giving me a lot. We've kind of gone through multiple touch points here and I still don't really know what it's about. There hasn't been one super compelling hook that has really pulled me in to buy more of my time as a potential listener who's not yet aware of the show.
Yeah. And to distinguish yourself from the crowd. Mm-hmm. So Blake might have some incredible interviews on his podcast, but the description is too generic. Mm-hmm. Interviews and insights from intellectuals and top performers, that could apply to any show. Yep. So what makes this show unique? What makes this show stand apart from all the other shows I could choose that might be in this category? And, you know, interviews and insights from intellectuals and top performers. Well, Tim Ferriss does that.
Yeah.
So the question is, how is this different than what Tim Ferriss is doing?
Yeah.
What distinguishes this show from all the other shows trying to do this? And your descriptions, your opportunity to do that. I agree. I like the idea of we answer questions you can't get answered on Google.
Yeah.
Ungoogleable. I kind of tripped over it. It's a unique concept, but it's not a term that's well known. And so I would just like flesh that out as straight ahead as I could. Like, I find answers to questions you can't find the answer to on Google. That's where I'd be kind of massaging the description a bit.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that feels like the seed of a whole concept. And so I briefly looked through some of the episode titles. And so if he was to take that and run with it as a concept to explore the answers to the questions you can't get the answers to on Google, however you want to phrase it, then I want to see in every single episode, as soon as I start scrolling, a question that I immediately know, like, oh, that is a question you can't get to the bottom of on Google, which mm-hmm. is a bit of a quandary because most questions have some answer on Google. And so mm-hmm. I think there's a bit of a tough nut to crack here. And if that's the premise, the episode titles have to basically ask that question. But what is that question that is not answerable on Google? I think the tension here is that the truth of that statement, that there are ungoogleable questions, is that Google might give you an answer, but it's not a sufficient answer. It's not really helpful. It's too surface level, or it doesn't really address the messiness of, you know, being a human and being alive. And so then you have to phrase the question in a way that hints at the nuance of it. And so that's where I would expect this to go. If that's the whole premise for the show, then you got to really stick to that with every single episode. And how do you really communicate that without it feeling like disingenuous? Because like you see the episode title and you're like, well, I could Google that. And so I think there's a balance to walk there if he was going to lean into that. The one other thing that I want to go back to is you mentioned Tim Ferriss before. And that was one of the things that I was interested when this episode or when the show came up is that there are so many shows that obviously Tim has been one of the most successful podcasters of all time. He's one of the earlier ones to really gain mainstream fame and listenership. And he's obviously spawned a lot of people who've been inspired by him to create similar shows. And the interesting thing, you think about like top performers, that phrase has become associated with Tim Ferriss. In certain circles, mm-hmm. if I think top performers, I immediately think of Tim Ferriss, which is mm-hmm. incredible mindshare on his part that he has reinforced that over hundreds and hundreds of episodes. Maybe he's into the thousands at this point over years of being every single episode in his intro talking about where we deconstruct the habits and mindsets of top performers. Like I can recite it now. I haven't listened to the show in years. And so there's actually another interesting point on that. Whereas using your episode intro to seed what you want to become known for in your audience's mind. And if you start in a small enough space with a unique enough topic, you can do that pretty quickly. But you look at Tim, top performers, that's a pretty big idea. And it's taken him, you know, a decade probably to now be synonymous with it. But I think that there are so many shows that use that same framing. But when I see that, I immediately think of Tim, which is the last thing mm-hmm. you want as a creator when you are positioning yourself as getting inside the minds of top performers. And I'm thinking of another podcast who probably has higher level guests, who's been doing it longer, has better production, who has all these advantages that you don't have. And so I think the answer here is to develop a more differentiated concept. And so my favorite example of this specifically with top performers is a show called Three Books by, the host is Neil Pasricha, I think. I don't know if it's Pasricha or Pasricha. And so he has a similar premise to some extent where he interviews the world's top performers, but instead of just having wide-ranging conversations, he specifically constructs each episode around the three most formative books of that person's life. And so now he's going to have a totally unique interview that gets into totally distinct topics than that person has given anywhere else. And it also gives the structure to that as a listener. And Neil is an author. He's really like cares a lot about books. He has his whole manifesto about books. And so like he's a book guy. And so it makes a ton of sense. And so I think that's the opportunity. If you want to interview top performers, maybe you want to build your network. Like what's the hook? What's the additional wrinkle you can add onto it that differentiates you from Tim Ferriss and, you know, dozens of other shows?
Yeah. And I'm looking through the episode titles and descriptions, and it looks like he's actually interviewed some really incredible people.
Yeah. Yep.
There's the seeds of maybe a good idea without really knowing what his perspective is, but this kind of grabbed me. Before turning 35, Lauren and her husband amassed a net worth of $2.5 million. There's a before turning 35 was the part that grabbed me. It's like, oh, that would be an interesting, it's like, top performer before 35 or maximize by 35 or something where it's like the angle on the show is, you know, my name's Blake. I'm going to turn 35 in 5 years and I want to figure out how to be at the top of my game in finance, relationships, and fitness by the time I'm 35. If you're under 35 and you want to improve your life, you know, join me on this journey. That's just an example of an angle that would be unique. And this is actually something I've thought about a lot, where you can take somebody who's blown up like Tim Ferriss and go, well, for his generation, that stuff might have worked. But, you know, we're Gen Z, like we're in a completely different world. We need somebody speaking up for us on these topics. Well, that's an angle right there that you can, you know, go after.
Yeah. And I think the thing is with that, for all we know, he could be doing that, but it's not being communicated through the description or anything else. And so if you are doing that, it's worth being more explicit than you think you need to be and really putting it out there front and center at every touch point so that somebody can't mistake what the show is actually about. And I really like that angle. And I think the other thing about that idea that you just presented in particular is I think of this as falling into like the quest archetype of a show concept where, okay, I'm going to turn 35 in 5 years, let's say. And it's like, okay, now there's this quest to achieve this thing in 5 years. So there's some tension because there's a timeline on it and there's some constraints to it. And I'm going to interview other people who are at that point or before that point about what they did to get there or who are currently at 35 living their best life. And so you could take this concept in many different ways. Like I would love to see a show for people who are 75 and who are at the peak of their career in this thing. So somebody who has never been fitter at 75, somebody who is like at the top of their earning potential, somebody like all these things, you could take this and apply it to different age ranges, but it has this interesting set of constraints that sharpen the hook on the show.
Yeah, exactly. And you can see how that angle, if we move into titles and description for episodes, you can see how having an angle or a perspective or a point of view helps. So, you know, there's an episode called Rebuilding Brotherhood with Mark Azule. By the way, he's appending to every episode, Distilled Podcast Episode 027. I would just get rid of that. It diminishes the punch of the episode. Just give us the headline, make it punchy. Rebuilding Brotherhood, it could be how to develop rich relationships before you turn 35. How to fix your locus of control. You can just start to angle all of this with this perspective of like, we're trying to do this as a group before we turn 35. Invest like a pro by the time you're 35, or how to amass $2.5 million by the time you're 35. Even experimenting with that, maybe that would be too much by always having like by the time you turn 35 or something.
Yep.
But there's something interesting about that, that I think if you're in that group, it's like, yeah, I want to know how to get my finances under control before I hit this milestone.
Yeah. As I'm kind of continuing to scroll down through these, the other thing that comes to mind is there's a breadth of topics here that I think makes it tough to get repeat listeners to some extent. And really what we're relying on is that Blake has to be a really exceptional interviewer here. And so I think like the first episode that we hear has to be so good that we're like, oh, I'll listen to him on any topic, because we see things like rebuilding brotherhood. Can you treat personality traits? How to fix your locus of control? All of those actually feel somewhat centered. I kind of get the sense of what this is. But then we get into some of these other ones, the glacial pace of public education. That now feels like quite different. And it's maybe interesting to me. You have to be a kind of like broadly interested kind of intellectual person, I think. Then we've got tips for a $430,000 raise in 4 hours. That's like, okay, now we're in tech VC fundraising. So, okay, so that kind of places me in a certain type of who the audience is here. Becoming a dad liberated me. And then we get into some other titles here, like Run Your Own Race. That's a title that shows up on countless feeds that it's like, what does that mean? It's hard to get me in the door here. And so I think that some of these titles are maybe could be sharpened up, but there's also this density of topic of like, what am I coming to this show to get? And the other thing that I want to like talk about is my sense from this show is that he's approaching this as a personal brand building show. And if that's the goal of your show, I know a lot of people, Danny Miranda is somebody who comes to mind. I don't know if you've ever come across him or his show. He's had quite a bit of success, but he's another like Tim Ferriss adjacent type of show. But his audience selection has been much more creator Twitter focused. And so Tim's is much more broad and eclectic. And I think that Danny's kind of been successful because he's picked a more targeted pool of guests to choose from. And so it's for a very specific audience. There's still a lot of overlap with that audience with Tim Ferriss's show, but it's a higher density of people who are in the tech Twitter space, which I think can work. But Danny is also, I've talked to him several times, and he's just like, my goal is to do this for like 10 or 15 years. I'm playing the long game, and I don't need to be successful now. I'm going to do thousands of episodes, and that's how I'm going to win. And so that's the mindset where if that's the game you're playing, you can do this, and that's totally fine. But if you are looking for quicker success than that, then you got to kind of look to like, okay, how can I actually optimize for some kind of discoverability, getting people in the door in other methods than just through they know me?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And again, Blake has been able to get some great guests. I recognize some of these names here, and that in it of itself is a big win. But then you have to imagine, for example, I recognize Ed Lattimore as a guest, but he's just on so many podcasts. You're going to be competing there, you know, including the Jordan Harbinger show, which is another kind of big podcast in this space. I think if you want to be that, if you want to be the next Tim Ferriss or Jordan Harbinger, they've been pretty open about how they got there. So in Tim's case, you just have to be blogging for like 20 years now. You have to have like 10 best-selling books under your belt, all about human performance. You have to build relationships with all these celebrities. And then you have to be friends with Kevin Rose, who helps you then launch your first episode. That's how it worked for him. And in Jordan Harbinger's case, he's said, you know, he was unknown, but he did a lot of advertising, promotion. He kind of got into the game where he saw an opportunity and a place to do arbitrage where he could win. So know the game you're playing. If this is the game you want to play, is there an opportunity for arbitrage that nobody else is seeing? But it can't be, I'm just going to get the same guests that these other shows are getting. And that's not going to work. You got to have an angle. And again, maybe Blake could sharpen this up or narrow the focus and really go after, like, Tim Ferriss is old, and I'm going to actually be speaking to Gen Z because they're coming up after me. So that's the focus of my show. Some sort of way of carving out your own piece of the pie that maybe nobody else is really focusing on.
Yeah. The other thing I heard Tim on a conversation recently, an interview, I can't remember what show it was on, but he was talking about how essentially he is adjusting his expectations around podcasting, where it's just becoming impossible for him to compete anymore at the top. And so he's had to reset his expectations of being, you know, like a top 50, top 100 podcast for a long time. And he's saying, you know, it's becoming harder and harder to do that, even for me with all his resources. And so he was kind of just like, you know, the podcast is going to play a different role in my life now. I'm just kind of at this point where I'm deciding, is this something that I really want to invest that much into to stay where I am right now? And so I think that that is something like, when I look at trends in podcasting, the shows that are growing are much more concept driven than just interviews with successful people. And Tim was one of the people who pioneered that and really made that popular. But, you know, trends always move and shift. And so he can kind of ride his own coattails to some extent for a long time. And whatever, he doesn't need to be probably top 50 in the world for the show to be worth it to him. He's got, a, you know, he doesn't need to work a day in his life anymore. But I think he's a competitive guy and wants to compete. But he made this analogy to, he's talked quite a bit about when he used to do investing. And there came some time, I can't remember what year it was, where just like all this VC money flooded the market and it made it totally irrational. And he was just like, okay, me as a small investor, I just can't compete in this anymore. So I'm getting out of here. That's what he was drawing the comparison to with podcasting. He's like, it's kind of getting crazy in podcasting, and I just don't know that I want to work that hard or, you know, want to invest that much into the show to stay at this level. And again, this is like you're trying to be a multiple tens, hundreds of millions of downloads. I think actually he might have over a billion downloads. So this is like, if you want to play at the top tier of the game, that's what you need to do. You don't need to do that to get like, you know, 5,000, 10,000 downloads an episode, build up a, you know, relatively small audience. And you can even have a smaller audience than that and still be successful. But it is worth knowing that even Tim Ferriss with this show format is not having as easy as a time as he used to have.
Yeah. All right. So on the packaging front, another thing I noticed is he has custom podcast episode artwork. So clap on that. I'm noticing a technical problem. I'm not sure if you picked it up. These are all cropped. They're all cut off. Yep. And when I look in the RSS feed, I just found like the specific image that this relates to. And when I open that up, it is in the wrong dimensions. This is a landscape image kind of built for thumbnail, built for YouTube. And podcast artwork has to be square, traditionally 3,000 pixels by 3,000 pixels. So in Spotify, the artwork is not showing up properly. So kudos for having custom episode artwork, but you need to create podcast specific cover art and make these all squares instead of landscape rectangles.
Yeah. And, you know, from what I can see here, so they are cropped, so we can't read the full text that is in some of these more recent episode images. So he's got this, probably looks like AI generated artwork, and then a phrase that is text in big bold text. And what I like is that that text builds on the title rather than just reiterating it. And so I think it's doing a great job. We brought this up a lot of building this tension, offering something new that isn't communicated in the title. And so I really like that he's doing that. And I think with being able to resize those images, get them formatted square, like that's a really strong point for the show.
Yeah. The only other technical thing in terms of podcast packaging is there is a trailer episode here. But what he's done is he's made kind of the Ed Lattimore episode his trailer episode. Worth the experiment, but traditionally a trailer episode is a short teaser, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, even 60 seconds that will entice people into listening. And so when I'm looking at a trailer, I'm looking for something short because it shows that the creator has done the work to distill the whole essence of the show into one little bite-sized piece of audio that I can listen to and say, oh yeah, this is my thing. I'm going to listen.
Yeah. The one other thing that I would say as a kind of caveat to some of what we have mentioned and maybe been a little bit critical of or constructive of is that I could see this show being the job that it's doing for Blake is a networking tool. To be able to have conversations and connect with people who you might not be able to elsewhere. And so that I think then goes back to what are your actual goals around the show and is growth important? And so you can optimize your show to be a networking tool to have conversations with these people that you want to get in touch with. That's a great goal for a show from a personal level, building your network and your relationships. And I know that we've talked before about how podcasting is just this unique tool in its ability to lead to other things and open other doors. And so I think if that's the job of the show for Blake, I don't think he needs to necessarily change a whole lot. But I will say that if he cares about growth, then you need to start adding on some additional layers and thinking about, okay, what is going to get a listener into this show? And the other angle to this is that it's easier to get guests on when you have a larger platform. And so you might reach this certain level where you've kind of got all your favors from your network and your friends. And now you want to start networking, even if the job is still networking and building your relationships with people who you'd like to connect with. it becomes harder and harder to connect with those people if you don't have a significant audience. And so mm-hmm. I think that they do serve each other at some point. And early on, you can kind of do a pretty good job of networking and relationship building without a big show, but it becomes easier to facilitate if you have a larger audience down the line. So that would be one kind of additional thought that I would kind of add to Blake, depending on what his goals are, that might influence the direction that he wants to go with some of the packaging, show content, topic selection, all those types of things.
Yeah. And the only other thing I'll mention is another opportunity is to add more social proof to the show by getting more people to review the show. So on Spotify, it looks like 3 people have reviewed it. And it looks like on Apple Podcasts, I'm not seeing any reviews. So that's an opportunity, is to get your listeners to leave some reviews in Apple Podcasts and to click that review button in Spotify. That will help the social proof of, like, when someone comes to the show, just seeing, oh, there's a bunch of people who have taken the time to review the show. That's another nudge for a potential listener to try your show out.
Yeah. So looks like, I mean, some of the things that I like, the custom episode artwork, I think the artwork for the show as a whole is like legitimate and professional looking. And I think the big takeaways for me in terms of potential listener acquisition and conversion when somebody comes to the show, if they come across it, is kind of making it a little bit easier for them to understand what they're going to get from the show that they might not get from other shows, and really that discoverability of the title. This, again, this could be a long-term brand play where Blake's just like, I'm going to do the grunt work of getting the show in mm-hmm. front of people now, and it's going to become known later. But you're kind of, you have to trade off. You can't have it both ways, where you're making it certainly harder in the short term. Maybe you're building brand equity over the long term, but that's not really worth much if you don't get in front of people early on.
No, that's good. Thanks, Blake, for submitting your show to be roasted. We know that takes a lot of guts, and we're cheering for you. We want to see this show succeed. If you want your show roasted by Jeremy and I, you can leave a review for our podcast, Podcast Marketing Trends Explained, in Apple Podcasts, and just list out the name of your show.